You're listening to Path of Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. I am your host, Aman Khusro, and I am joined by a very aggressive, and I don't even know what kind of puns or comments I can make this time around. I'm just with my co-host, my buddy Zach, aka Ragwizen. What's up, man?
Not much. How's it going with you?
Tired.
Yeah, same. I just put my kid down and dozed off while doing so. So I like groggily woke up and was like, oh, shit, we got to record.
That's right. Well, I'm glad that you were able to put in the time tonight. How is your how is your daughter?
She's doing great.
She's feeling a little under the weather, right?
Yeah, she was a little bit ago, but she's... Yeah. That's just what it's like to be, too. Sometimes you just get colds randomly. Then you feel fine. You give the cold to everybody else.
Yeah. I feel like all my friends who have kids between the ages of, like, 1 and 4 are always randomly sick.
Yeah, it do be like that sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that's how we build that immunity, and we keep Nurgle away from us.
Yeah, we're always joking. We're like, did she just eat something off the floor? Ah, she needs the germ. She needs to get sick. It's fine.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. It's crazy how bodies work.
Oh, true.
What did you do this weekend? Have you been playing any Underworlds? Are you doing Kill Team? What's the vibe right now?
I hosted a Kill Team event yesterday. That was very cool. So ran that for some locals. We had about 11 people show up. That was pretty nice. Finished painting some Thousand Suns, Heresy Era Thousand Suns, just as kind of like a fun painting project. So I've been working on like Ahriman and some Dusty Boys.
Love that.
Yeah, I've been pretty low key. Saw some friends, got a manicure this weekend.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, how about you? How was your weekend?
It was good. What did I do? Well, I was a groomsman at my buddy's wedding. We've been friends for like 25 years, so it was a lot of fun. It was nice to see like his dad. I hadn't seen his dad in a while, his family. And you know, when you and like the group of friends that I'm with, it's like we all met each other in elementary school and we've just been friends ever since. And it's like sometimes there'll be weeks or months even where we don't talk, and then you just start talking and everything's like right back where it used to be. So I love them. They're like my war band, you know. They're fun. They're all boys.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then Sunday, even though I was supremely hungover, I promised my fiance we'd go to the zoo and hang out with her, one of her best friends and her godson. So we went to the zoo. And I'm going to be honest, I think I was having more fun at the zoo than her godson, who's 2. I was like, can we go see the lion over there? I really enjoy animals. And... yeah. Oh, and I redid my garage, which is like a very boring thing to do, I think. But also at the same time, like I was very proud.
You know, man, we're getting to the age where you get excited about doing things like redoing your garage. Or what did I do the other day? It was like such a dad thing. Oh, we cleaned out our we have like a storage space under our stairs, and then we rented a storage unit because we live in kind of a smaller townhome. And I like reorganized the space and moved stuff over into the storage unit. And I was like, oh my gosh, we've got so much extra storage space now. I feel so accomplished. And I was like,
more miniatures.
No, it's just like Christmas decorations and stuff. And I was it was just total normal, boring dad stuff. And I was like, wow, I spent all day doing this and I actually feel great about that. You know, it just comes with the territory, I think.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I could go on and on about this, but yeah, very proud. And also, I think I fixed my 3D printer. Shout out to G from the Vassal Discord. He like walked me through some things.
Nice.
Having a 3D printer is a lot of work, and it can be a giant pain in the behind.
Oh, yeah.
When things don't work, because it's like troubleshoot everything. And I'm very tired of cleaning it over and over and over again. I feel like if I don't fix it by the end of the week, I'm just going to sell it. And then just... pay people to print me stuff.
There's a lot of good organizations or companies that'll do prints now. Yeah, I definitely agree, especially those resin printers. You know, the quality you can get is really high, but, you know, cleaning the print tray, cleaning the FEP, you know, cleaning out the resin, you know,
and then exposing yourself to all that, right?
It's yeah, and you're doing it with like gloves and masks and everything. It's like it can be a hassle. Even I've only just got a filament printer, and like sometimes I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna need to take 20 minutes to re-level this bed, or I have to redo like change the nozzle and re-spool the filament and stuff, like run it through the whole thing and like clean it out and stuff. And I'm like, it's not hard, it's not difficult, but I'm like, it is a hassle.
So, yeah, dude, like I spent like 10 minutes just sanding my build plate because like I'd never sanded it before, and everybody, like every third person who I asked was like, well, have you tried sanding it? And I was like, so many people asked, I was like, whatever. So I watched like 5 videos on it, and then I went to Home Depot and bought some stuff. So
yeah,
and then I put lubricant on it. I'd never used that before, so we'll see what happens.
So but, shout out to Games Workshop for not making us do that and just selling us the models. But yes, there's fun in both printing and buying pre-made stuff. So
yeah. Well, speaking of shouting out Games Workshop, we'd like to give them a thank you for sending us this preview copy so that we can review it. I know that this is going live after the reveal date, but honestly, we got this deck, or I got this deck like 5 hours before. I think I got it around like 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah, you messaged me pretty late on that Friday night.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I'm not going to have time to read all this, so I'm just going to scan it, which like, you know, takes like 30, 45 minutes, and then I'm just going to send it to Zach, and then I'm just going to post it a link, and then everybody can look at it, because I don't think anyone else posted it either, so I guess I got lucky that I was able to get it on the Friday.
Yeah,
some people got it the following day.
Well, it's still not out in the States, period. I mean, or for pre-order in the States at all. It's or I think it's up for pre-order, but it's not going to get shipped or something like that. It's behind. It's
delays.
Yeah. And I mean, that is what it is. I'm not upset about it or anything. It's just, I'm not surprised at all. But it is cool that we get to do it. I mean, and now we get to split up our releases and stuff. So, you know, you get a surprise episode in the middle of your week.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, at the end of the day, the community, all they want is they just want the cards like in the mods so they can play right and deck build on the deck building sites. So that's why I was like, I have to scan it as soon as possible, because at the very least, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, people are going to read your reviews, but they're going to make their own opinions. So let's just let people make their own opinions, and you know, get the other content created, get the cards out there so other people can create content as well. You know, those who don't get preview copies. So, anywho, we're here to talk about Beastbound Assault. It's the brand new Rivals deck, and it's the final release of the Gnarlwood, according to the roadmap, which is kind of exciting. This is a really fun one in that, Zach, there is no plot card.
No, it almost feels like there should be, because there's one phrase that's reused multiple times throughout this, and it feels like it should just be a keyword. Like, you know how Tooth and Claw has a keyword for savage? And just like, oh, when you're wounded or have a stagger token or have a charge token, you're savage. And then here, they keep repeating the phrase, this friendly fighter is a beast, companion, minion, and or has one or more denizen upgrades. Like, you could have shortened that to a keyword and put on a plot card, but I guess, well, one, it's nice to not have a plot card for championship, obviously, as long as we still have that plot lock thing. I guess that's also not the best use of a plot card, even if they did have one. So it's no plot card this time around. But the deck still feels pretty coherent without it. So I think as we jump into it and you guys hear why, I think that it'll become apparent.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think for those of us who are still playing championship or prefer to play championship, no plot card, awesome. For those of us who are playing Nemesis or Rivals, this doesn't change the experience. So right. I think, if anything, awesome win for everybody. And hopefully this is a sign of things to come. The deck is pretty cool. My favorite thing with these Rivals decks is the art.
Hmm.
Because they showcase all of the warbands. It's unrealistic at this point to get every single warband, but I think they do a good job of like getting a variety. Obviously, they highlight the most recent season, so you'll see a lot of Gnarlwood, Nether Maze, Harrow Deep, even Dire Chasm. But it is still nice to see like Godsworn Hunt pop up on a card, you know, or
Eyes of the Nine.
Farstriders, Eyes of the Nine. So I really do appreciate that. because, you know, this game is been going on for years, and there is a story, there is a history behind it. And to be able to even get a callback and seeing some of those older war bands in the newer art style is nice. And I think this artwork is particularly creative because there's a focus of, like, you have these little denizens, which is a big keyword in this deck, referring to, like, little and maybe not so little creatures and inhabitants of the Norwood that are either being forced to or cooperating with the warbands or fighters from warbands to do cool things, which I really like. My favorite picture is funny. There's one of, like, what's the big guy's name from the Worm Spat with the two axes? Gulgotch. Yeah, Gulgotch. He's, like, found this, like, really ugly looking slug and he's just smiling at it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, art has been, I have not disliked any art from most of the recent releases. I know some people think they've been hit or miss. Art is subjective, obviously, but I think the artists are just having fun with some of these. Like, not every card is going to be some 10 out of 10 illustration that really evokes Age of Sigmar lore or whatever, but, like, some of these are just cool. It's like, you know, it's a deck about bugs and animals and, like, the fighters kind of going feral on each other, and the cards definitely evoke that, which I think is great.
I completely agree. So without further ado, I think maybe we should just jump into it. So we'll start with the lore bit, which I really like that they do that for these decks. So, Beastbound Assault, the root halls under the Gnarlwood are uncharted territory where lurking horrors prey on the unwary. And yet, with enough willpower, these savage beasts can be captured and trained to fight alongside particularly powerful or charismatic warriors. Such alliances are fleeting and fragile, however, as every relationship in Gur is ultimately one of predator and prey. For a while, though, a warband skilled in beastbinding, whether through magical means or an impressive feat of animal handling, can be bolstered by fiends of all shapes and sizes. These warriors charge into battle accompanied by multifarious horrors that bound or wing alongside them, tearing into enemies with vicious stingers, gnashing teeth, and rending claws.
It's a cool little bit of lore. And I mean, this is such a neat idea that it's just like, hey, we're in Gur. It's the realm of beasts. Obviously, there'd be, like, some sort of, like, you know, bestial intercession or, like, you know, some way to get these things to fight alongside of you. So it's like so. Mm-hmm. It's so, like, in line with the lore of Age of Sigmar and stuff. I think it's great.
Yeah. I honestly, I think it's really cool. So, I like how it just gives you a little bit of theme to, like, figure out and understand why things are happening. But, like, we're not getting drowned in it. It's not being overly complicated. And it's vague enough to where, like, we can kind of come up with our own scenarios, which is cool.
You can fill in the blanks with ourselves, yeah.
That's right. That's right. Well said. So let's jump into the deck review. So we're going to do this as per usual. If this is your first time joining, one of us is going to read the card. The person who didn't read the card will get to react first, and then they'll kind of have a mini discussion. Some cards require longer discussion than others. And then we're just going to keep running through, taking turns by section. So I'll start with objectives. Zach will go for gambits, and then I'll finish it off with upgrades. But of course, you'll hear both our thoughts on every card. So, we're going to start with Dogged Determination. This is a Surge hybrid for one glory. Score this immediately after an activation step if one or more vulnerable friendly fighters are each on an objective token that is not in your territory, or two or more friendly fighters are each on an objective token that is not in your territory, and one or more enemy fighters are out of action.
We've talked about these type of, like, vulnerable cards before. It's just really hard to, it's really hard to set up. I mean, yeah, you can, like, have a two-wound fighter run them through a lethal and score this, kind of. But I think more often than not, this is going to be, like, a pseudo-aggro card. You need one kill and two fighters in enemy territory. So in that regard, it's kind of like a Surge Path to Glory that's a little bit harder because it has to be in enemy territory.
It just has to be not your territory.
Oh, true. So, yeah, could be no man's land as well. So I think it's pretty good. I mean, championship wise, this might be a little too hard for a lot of decks to pull off, but I don't also don't think it's terrible for championship. If you're playing a fast aggro warband, if you're playing Rippas or Gnarl Spirit or something like that, where you've got good speed, reasonable range, and you want to get in your opponent's face anyway, yeah, two objectives in enemy territory and one single kill is, like, not the worst thing in the world to try to set up.
No, I don't disagree. I think, well, I might disagree a little bit, and I think the reason is like, from a championship perspective, this is actually fairly decent for a warband who is going to take a card like Path to Victory.
Hmm.
Because scoring on objectives requires you to maintain the same board state, or at least try to maintain the same level of board state, even if it's on different objectives. So I think if you have a natural synergy of just wanting to hold objectives, especially in enemy territory, then I think this is just going to be an occurrence that just happens and you score it. I think if you're looking for a surge that rewards you for being in enemy territory and killing people, I would maybe caution any sort of exuberance regarding this card, because the stipulation of having to be an objective token not in your territory, I think, is very difficult.
Mm.
Especially because, like, people will be playing Fearsome Fortress and stuff like that. And Fearsome Fortress, you know, if they know that you're playing Beastmount Assault, Fearsome Fortress just means that the objective has to be within, you know, one hex away from the midboard. So they can put them in your zone, right? And they're still be able to score off their stuff, but then you can't score potentially on cards like these. So I think it's a bit of a trap.
It can be, for sure. I would definitely agree. Nemesis wise, I think it's okay. I mean, obviously, the list of surges is going to be a lot smaller than Nemesis. I think it's probably going to make the cut just because of that. But honestly, in Nemesis, a lot of times things stay vulnerable. Like, there's not as many great strengths in Nemesis. There's not as many, like, there's a good amount of ping. There's at least one ping card in every Rivals deck right now. But there's not a lot of, like, massive burst damage, and a lot of times things just survive with one wound, and if you can sneak it onto an objective for one glory, that's pretty good. It's not terrible.
Yeah, it kind of almost reminds me of, like, a lethal... No, what was it? The card where you had to run through a lethal hex?
Oh, Calculated Risk.
It kind of reminds me of a Calculated Risk, because if you have a two-wound fighter... Or like a fighter, like maybe even a dog in Hexbanes.
Mm-hmm.
You can just run the dog through a lethal, support an attack, and then maybe, you know, score multiple surges. Because you don't have to hold the objective, you just have to be on it.
Yeah, it is kind of cool and flexible. So I like the idea behind this one. I don't know how often it's going to be scored. I think sometimes it's going to get discarded, but I don't think it's bad.
Yeah, I think if we have to talk that long about a surge, it's probably not the best.
Could be better, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, next one is Effortless Teamwork. Duel for two glory. Score this in the end phase if there are more enemy fighters out of action than friendly fighters out of action, and each surviving friendly fighter is a beast, companion, minion, and or has one or more denizen upgrades.
It's a lot for two. I almost feel like this should be a three glory card, because at minimum, I think maybe we should pause for just a second. We should have done this at the beginning. This beast, companion, minion, and or one or more denizen upgrades. It doesn't limit which factions can use this, but it does limit which factions are really good with this deck. Which factions have a lot of beasts, minions, or companions? It's Exiled Dead, Black Patter's Buccaneers, Hrothgorn's Mantrappers. Gnarl Spirit Pack can all be beasts when they go beast mode.
I guess maybe Soul Raid, they got two beasts in there, right?
No, Fish isn't a beast anymore. They changed that in Last Errata.
Mm.
Interestingly, Old Skaven, Spikeclaw Swarm, all the little guys are minions. So actually not terrible there. There's probably a couple others, but yeah, so to talk about that, you kind of need that list of which factions have those keywords to really think about this, because Effortless Teamwork, each surviving friendly fighter is one of these keywords. Again, I feel like this should have maybe been put into its own little shorthand keyword. That could be really hard if you're a 6-model warband and you don't have any of these keywords already. But, you know, if you're playing Gnarl Spirit Pack, and you make everyone go Beast Mode and not Inspire, and you just kill more enemy fighters than friendly fighters are dead, it's a 2-glory end phase for basically free. If you're playing Hrothgorn's Mantrappers and you give Hrothgorn a single Denizen upgrade and you kill more enemies, then this is a really easy one to score. But if you're playing like Sons of Elmore and you have to give everybody a Denizen upgrade. So this one I'm going to say is like, it's an A-plus card for certain factions, and for everybody else it's like F. It's super hard.
I do not disagree at all. I think one of the first things I thought of when I started reading some of the cards was like, okay, Exile Dead love this. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be happy? Zach.
Yes. that keyword really, really tickles it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really funny. Even one of our patrons was like, you know, is this going to be the episode where like Zach finally gets excited about Exile Dead again? Because I feel like on a lot of episodes in the last couple months, it's always been like they nerfed Exile Dead, or everyone's complaining about Exile Dead, you know, and it's just nice to see that maybe they're back.
It could be. I mean, yeah, I don't think they've jived with most of the... They're pretty okay with Fearsome Fortress, but I think this is the deck that's kind of like, oh, you can see some synergies here, so mm-hmm. we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, but I completely agree. I think for like an Exile Dead style warband, like this is actually pretty good. Yes, there's a lot of aggro. You have a lot of 2-1 fighters, but your fighters can come back as long as Daintalos is alive. So as long as you kill like maybe a couple of the opposing warband's fighters, this is a really good card to be able to pull. Outside of that, unless you're like a very aggressive, damaged, focused warband, it's kind of difficult to pull this off. Mm. I think maybe if you're an elite fighting warband and you're able to trade maybe like 2-for-1, it'll work out. But then again, you need those minions and denizens and beast upgrades and companion stuff. So,
yeah.
TBD, I guess. The next one is Gifted Pathfinder. Duel for 1 glory. Score this in the end phase if one or more friendly fighters are each on an objective token that is not in your territory, and one or more of those fighters are within 2 hexes of another friendly fighter that is beast, companion, minion, and or denizen upgrade.
This one's not bad. I mean, it's really have 2 forward fighters. One's on an objective and one has the correct keyword. And again, if you're a warband that has a lot of those keywords, baseline, and is like forward aggro, like fast aggro, pretty reasonable, actually. I know they're not in the best place at the moment, but especially in Nemesis, where, you know, the fact that they're a first season warband don't have the best cards, but Spikeclaw Swarm, you could just throw 2 little rats into the enemy territory once it's on an objective. The other one dies and you res it, you know, within 2 hexes of the other one. You kind of score this really easily. I think, again, this is going to come down to, like, do you have these keywords available baseline? How many Denizen cards are you going to run? But I don't think it's a bad card.
Yeah, I think this, like, it's hard to talk about this stuff, and I think you addressed it well at the beginning, was like, this is really situational, because oftentimes I'm just thinking about specific warbands. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, maybe for like a Hexbane, this is pretty solid. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to fight in the midboard anyways, and you have your pets, their beasts, your doggies. You can also, you know, maybe have upgrades that can make your fighter denizens. There's a lot of synergies with specific warbands. Ultimately, I think this deck enables you to be able to score this with any warband. Mm-hmm. But in a competitive environment, which Underworlds, you know, claims to be the most competitive game out there, you're going to want to maximize the synergy. And that starts with the innate keyword. So I think, again, unfortunately or fortunately, this is a card where it's like good with some people, remains to be seen with others. I really like this one. The art or the name even. Inseparable Friends. Hybrid. For 1 glory, score this in the end phase if one or more surviving friendly beasts, companions, and or minions each have 1 or more denizen upgrades, or one or more surviving friendly fighters each have 2 or more denizen upgrades.
Again, depends on your faction, but if you're a faction that has a lot of beast companions and or minions, which there are plenty of factions that have 3 or 4, you slap on 1 denizen upgrade and this is an auto score in the end phase. Mm-hmm. We'll look at the upgrades when we get to them, obviously. But there's a number of good denizen upgrades. I think you could do the second part of this, like have two denizen upgrades on one fighter, and not feel too bad about it either. Like, especially if you're playing something like a Hrothgorn, or you're playing something like even Sons of Velmorn, like to stack a lot of upgrades on a single fighter. Getting two denizens on a single fighter is like not impossible. I'll default back to your phrase, which is just like, yeah, on some teams this is great. On other teams remains to be seen. But yeah, if you already have a faction where your beast or companion minion is a good one glory end phase card.
Yeah, I think in worst case scenario, regardless of the number of beast companions or whatever you have in your deck or your warband, at baseline, this is one glory, put two upgrades on one fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Not great, but not bad.
Yeah, and only gets better from there.
Yep. Keen Collector is our next card for two glory. Score this in the end phase if a surviving friendly leader has three or more denizen upgrades.
Three's a lot, especially three denizens. I mean, denizens are good. I don't know how many you're specifically putting in your deck. Championship, probably. You might not even put a whole three in a championship deck. In Nemesis, three, you know, to get three, you kind of want to have, like, probably six of your upgrades be denizens, and then you're only opening up four to your faction upgrades. So it's like, that's a bit of an ask, and especially your leader can get smoked pretty quickly in Nemesis. I'm not as crazy about this one. The fact that it's two glory is really nice, but I don't know how strong it is in particular.
Yeah, I think in championship, this is probably not going to be played. Mm. The more and more I think about it. I think we have the rule of three, which I think you were alluding to. But there are just so many good upgrades in the essential pack.
Mm.
It makes it very hard to like dedicate three. And maybe even one of those is suboptimal for two glory end phase, because they're also, you could just take Grey Gains, right? And that could just be the replacement. I think you're going to see this card a lot in Nemesis, because you have such a limited number of cards you can select from. And if you're going to pick this deck, then you are attracted to the denizen upgrades. Because you're not going to pick a rivals deck where you don't like the upgrades, right?
Right.
And from there, you know, I think about leaders who really like this. I mean, the card art has Griselle on it. You know, I think she's going to be a leader that's going to be Voltroned immensely. I think Hrothgorn is a great leader. Black Powder is a great leader. Daintalos even, you know, like, why not?
Yeah. Especially because the Exiled Dead upgrades are, like, there's some stellar ones in there, but I could easily see myself putting six denizens in as well.
Yeah. So I like this one in Nemesis. And then in Rivals, I think this is part of your game plan.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
So not a bad card. The next one is Loyal Allies. Surge Duel for one glory. Score this immediately after an attack action. If a friendly fighter's attack or defense roll included one or more supports or double supports, and one or more of those symbols was a success.
I think this is great for a variety of reasons. I mean, it's very easy to get supports with certain warbands, especially warbands that have, again, beasts, minions, companions. You know, you can set up, like, Scuttle with Soul Raid. You can set up multi-moves with other factions, especially multi-moves with Hexbane's Hunters with your dogs. So it's very easy to set this up. Then there's certain cards that make you count as having supports, like Bonded in Rippas, you know, just makes this score really easily. And then there's the fact that double support on defense also includes cover. And I know, you know, that's not thematically what this is about, but like, you could just have a two dodge fighter in a cover hex, roll a cover support, and like, yeah, that's great. Also, this doesn't need to be a successful attack or defense roll. You can roll, you know, your opponent can roll a crit hit, and you roll a double support, which is a success in cover, and then still die and score this, because that was a success on the roll. So, like, yeah, this is just like many cards in the past, you know, we've seen Branching Fate be used in the past, or there was another one where it was, like, roll, I can't remember what the name of it was, there was another one where it was, like, all the dice or the same face or something like that. But it's just a roll dice and sometimes score a surge. And those cards are almost always good. So I think this is a great search card.
Yeah, another Warband I think of a lot is Hexbane.
Yes.
So it's I like it. It's nice. It's not a gimme because you can't control the dice, but it also kind of is.
You're going to roll enough dice that it's not a gimme, but it's the next best thing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the next thing, Packmasters. 2 glory, duel. Score this in the end phase if 3 or more friendly fighters are in enemy territory, and each of those fighters is a beast, companion, minion, and or has one or more denizen upgrades.
For 2 glory, this is really, really good. I mean, again, warband depending, but 3, like, if you're a faction that has these keywords, 3 fighters in enemy territory for 2 glory. That's really strong. I mean, this is my favorite card for Exiled Dead because it's literally just get 3 zombies in enemy territory and you get it. And you have 6 zombies on the per 5. Yeah, 5 fighters with these keywords to start with. So that's great. Again, like Gnarl Spirit Pack is just get 3 beast mode fighters in enemy territory for 2 glory end phase. That's really powerful. Mm-hmm. So again, warband specific, but like the warbands who have it, it's great for everybody else. You know, non beast companion minion factions, you have to get 3 denizen upgrades and then you have to get them in enemy territory and you have to like not use other upgrades while you're in that territory. That's like, that's a bit more of an ask, but yeah. I think for the factions that have those keywords, this is just a gimme. This is an auto include in your decks.
Yeah, I think if you are one of those warbands that may be struggling with these keywords innately, it's become significantly more of a tall order. Unless you have a larger warband that doesn't just all die, but wants to be in enemy territory, because that gives you the ability over time to start making them denizens if you need to. Ultimately, I think this deck, as Zach has prefaced, is probably only going to be selected by you if you have a lot of these keywords innately. So yes, Exiled Dead, a lot of cards work really well for them in Gnarl Spirit. But aside from that, what I'm curious is, can you just take an elite warband, like a Gore Chosen, right?
Mm.
And just, or even a Crushes, you know, tanky, especially in the Nemesis format, where damage is hard to come by, and then have them survive? And then give them upgrades. You know, like, is it possible? Probably. Is it consistently going to win you games? I don't think so.
No, especially because I think any of these cards in those factions become solid later on in, like, turn 2 and 3. But they're all effectively dead in round 1, right? Because, like, all your fighters have denizen upgrades. Okay, well, even if you are playing something wooden really elite like Crushes, that is, everyone's alive, and you have equipped 3 denizen upgrades in round 1. That's very rare. Now, there's at least one card that allows you to count as if you have a denizen upgrade, but it's like, I believe it's only one card that lets you do that, so it's not really worth talking about. But yeah, I agree. I'm there with you 100%.
Right on. Okay, next one. Tireless Explorer. Surge for 1 glory duel. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter makes their second or subsequent move action in the same phase, and after 3 different activation steps in that phase, that fighter occupied a hex in your territory, no one's territory, and enemy territory.
This is insane for Exiled Dead, because, yeah. I mean, this is just Dance of Dentalos over and over again, so awesome. For everybody else, I really love the design on this card. Because this is a surge that effectively says, get glory for just moving. You know, we've seen a lot of people complain in the past about surges that don't have dice involved, or it's just make move actions. It's effectively a free surge card. Like, your opponent can stop you from scoring this by killing the fighter or standing on objectives and stuff to, like, prevent you from standing on them. But effectively, it is roll no dice, just move places and score glory. But they've made it really, really, really hard. And I think for a lot of factions, it's going to just be a little too hard, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's one of those if you, well, so like, remember, every warband can move right now, even after they move, but
right.
You're right, because you're getting so much more, you know, whether you like to use the phrase action economy or action compression, you're getting so much value out of a multi-move, right? With the Exiled Dead, with the Thorns of the Briar Queen. And actually, they're being pushed, so that's not even a move. So
right.
It's more like even Hexbane's actually, because the dogs move, right? After every attack.
Oh, yeah.
Support.
You could do them so, as well, for sure.
Yeah, I think this deck works pretty well with Hexbane's. But I think, obviously, the preferred choice is the Exiled Dead. You could, in theory, spend three actions or three activations trying to score the Surge. I don't know if I recommend it. But if you are going to be doing your game plan, which is Exiled Dead is zombie up the board and then kill you, then it's great.
And it also is really easy to shut down because you have to occupy Hex in your territory, no one's territory, and enemy's territory. And if they just prevent you from placing a Hex in no man's land or placing Hexes close enough together that you could realistically hit three in a single turn, like, I think you can meta this game, this objective out of the game pretty easily. But again, I think for Exiled Dead, it's worth putting in. Maybe not for anybody. Well, maybe for Hexbane's if you're feeling saucy with the dogs, but that's really up to you.
Yeah, I mean, you can just kill that fighter too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, a good Exiled Dead player will have maybe two fighters who fulfill that condition. So if you kill one of them, the other one can still score it. But like in the Hexbane example, just unfortunately kill the dog that is doing most of the moving. You've solved the problem. I love this alt card art. Train them up. Duel for one glory. Score this in the end phase if one or more friendly fighters each made one or more move actions, one or more attack actions, and one or more other actions in the preceding phase. And one or more of those fighters is a beast companion minion and or has one denizen upgrade.
This
is like keep them guessing.
It is a little bit, but there's been some talk online. Apparently, this is scorable with a single charge action, because charge is another action.
Super action.
Yeah. And then charge is an action, and then move an attack or action. So, like, if a companion, minion, or beast just makes a charge action, you auto-score this, which I think is not the intended use of this card. But for the time being, yeah, this is an auto-take. This is a great card. It's a free one glory card. But, yeah.
So they're saying, because a charge is a move action followed by an attack action.
Technically, because a charge is its own action that contains a move and attack action, it fulfills all the requirements for this, which, again, I don't think that's how it's supposed to be utilized, and maybe we'll see an FAQ if it becomes really ubiquitous, but, yeah, you just have a beast charge, and this is a free one glory. Better or worse? I don't know. But... yeah, it's a very good card if you have Beast Companion or Minion.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can see the move and the attack. I'm going to have to double check the rules. It's not the top of my head, but if that's what people are saying in the Vassal Discord, then most people there are fairly intelligent when it comes to the rules stuff. So I will say, yeah, maybe it's not how it is intended, but you know, if it benefits you and you can do it, you should do it.
Might as well.
Ironically, I feel like this is not a good card for Exiled Dead, maybe, because you don't really want to make as many charges. Maybe with the dude with the axe, the halberd, what's his name?
Regulus. Yeah.
Regulus
scores it. Also, like, if you get a denizen upgrade on Dentalos, and then you, like, dance move, dance attack, dance counts as the extra action, and you move and you attack, then you kind of get it as well. So I think there's a number of ways to score it, so I still think it's quite good. I still think it's quite good for them.
All right, next card is Unbeatable Team. Surge Duel for 2 glory. Score this immediately after an opponent's power step. If there are more friendly fighters on objective tokens than enemy fighters on objective tokens, and there are more enemy fighters out of action than friendly fighters out of action.
I want to say this is a good card, just because it's one of the easier 2 glory surges in the game. I mean, you look at 2 glory surges, they're usually... like, Sudden Demise requires a lot more setup than people thought it would, just because, like, having it in your hand at the same time as a ping, the same time as a ping would kill, it, like, doesn't always come up. Trying to think of some other 2 glory end phases that we've seen in the past. But usually they've been pretty difficult, and this is, like, it's kind of sort of a surge path to glory, because like get a kill, have multiple fighters on objectives, have more, you know, have more dead or have more enemies dead and have more fighters on objective tokens. I think it's like okay. I don't think you're going to score it every game, but I think there's the potential to score it every game, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting one. I think this card has the potential to be quite meta-defining, but at the same time, it is not an easy two-glory surge.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I can see situations in which you charge onto an objective, kill an enemy fighter, and then the train kind of starts rolling from there. I think perhaps it's easier in championship just because you have more objective like placement manipulation. But ultimately, you know, the goal is to stand on objective tokens or feature tokens in enemy territory while assaulting them. So I think this is pretty decent. And I like how you don't have to hold the objectives, you have to be on them.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely scorable with Soul Rate. You just throw a fish on a token, kill everybody, and if the fish is just the only one on an objective token, you can score this. I think there's like some, you're going to get some weird warbands that just like coincidentally score this all the time. I'm a little worried about this one. I think this might, I'm not going to call for it to be like, you know, banned or whatever immediately, but I think there's a world in which this gets restricted in the very near future.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, it's a good card.
Yeah.
And it should be scorable, which I love. It remains to be seen how consistent it becomes, but I don't think it's going to be, like, a super consistent card. And I think if you know your opponent's playing Beastbound Assault, they're most likely running Unbeatable Team. And if that's the case, play around it.
Yeah, for sure.
Unexpected End is our next card. It is also a surge. Score this immediately after an enemy fighter is taken out of action by a friendly fighter other than a leader that is a beast, companion, minion, and or has one or more Desonant upgrades for one glory.
It's a good card. I mean, this deck isn't particularly aggro, but if this is like, there's a lot of stuff that's like have enemy fighters out of action. This is the only surge that is kill an enemy. But it's a good one. It's just like, yeah, for the factions that are going to be running this, the way you're going to be running it, this is going to be kill something with anybody other than your leader, because that's going to be most of your warband is going to have these keywords. So really, really good surge.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. The next one is We Stand Together. Surge duel. Score this immediately after an opponent's power step. If two or more friendly fighters are each a beast, companion, minion, and or have one or more Desonant upgrades, and two or more of those fighters are on objective tokens.
Again, I mean, for the factions it's good for, it's free. For everybody else, it's hard. I mean, that can kind of sum up this objective deck in a nutshell. We Stand Together is kind of the card for this. Is just like, hey man, if you got these keywords, you're in business. Like, Exiled Dead is going to score this all day, every day. Hrothgorms is probably going to score this all day, every day, because you just, like, throw two of your little Noblars on it. They're all minions. Yeah. So, and it's a surge for holding two. This is for factions with the keywords, this is Hidden Purpose. And Hidden Purpose was restricted. Mm-hmm. For everybody else, it's Hidden Purpose, but you need to throw on objectives, which is difficult but doable.
Yeah. The only thing is that it's after an opponent's power step, so the opponent will have an opportunity. I guess it's the same, because Hidden Purpose was after an activation. So yeah. If anything, this just confirms that your opponent gets one action after you set this up. For them to try to stop it, unless of course you're using like a sidestep in their power phase, and then their power step ends.
Or you just do it on objectives in your backfield. Like, yeah, they'll have a step to react to it, but like, what's the chance they get across the board and kill your guys on the back of your board and get them off objectives? Pretty low, all things considered.
It is low. It is low. It's a good card.
It's a good card.
Those are all the objectives.
So, Aman, do you have a favorite out of these objectives?
I don't know. Like, it's a good deck. Or rather, it's good enough. I guess I like... No. Do I have a favorite? Yeah, I guess I'll go with Loyal Allies just because it's low-hanging fruit.
It is.
But it's a good card.
Yeah, it's absolutely a really good one. I'm going to go with Packmasters just because that is the Exiled Dead card. I think it's the card where I saw this and I was like, oh man, I'm going to play Exiled Dead again. I'm going to zombie all over everybody in the near future, and it's going to be a very fun time. But with that, I think we can move on to the ploys. Again, this is a Universal Rivals deck, which means there's no spells. These are just going to be ploys. Makes it usable by everybody, but we'll see in the future if they start to add some spells. But for right now, we'll go through our ploys. The first one is Blossoming Friendship. Choose a friendly fighter with no tokens, so no move or charge tokens. Give that fighter one Denizen upgrade from your hand. It does not cost any glory points. Then give this chosen fighter one charge token and one stagger token.
A Blossoming Friendship indeed. I don't know. I like the fact that you can get the Denizen upgrade, but giving the fighter a charge token and a stagger token is kind of a hefty punishment. Like, ideally, you would have wanted this card to, like, you just throw it at the end of your turn, and when you've already set up the other conditions to whatever card you're trying to score. But I'm not a big fan. If it was just a charge token or just a stagger token, fine. But both, I think, is a very hefty price to pay, especially when your fighter has to have no tokens to begin with.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is, like, the best use case is your large model count warband. You're, like, a 6 or 7 model count warband. You're like, I really want to get a Denizen upgrade, and I'm not going to activate this fighter anyway. Mm. Otherwise, it's really, really hard to utilize.
Yeah.
Next, we've got Defensive Formation. Choose up to 2 friendly fighters in your territory that are each a beast, companion, minion, and or have one or more Denizen upgrades. Give each chosen fighter a guard token.
I like getting guard tokens on multiple fighters. I think it can be quite useful. I think that, for example, like Spite Closet boosts their survivability quite strongly, especially because...
And it chooses.
Yes, and it chooses. That's correct. But like Hungering Skaven starts with 2 dodge, right? So
Lurking Skaven.
Lurking Skaven. Yep. So making Lurking Skaven go on guard the beginning of the game and being aggressive with them is a very good strategy, right? It can do some cool things. Guard is also important because you're not getting driven back off objectives unless knockback's in play. So I like it. I think it makes sense. I'm not the biggest fan of guard cards, but in this particular scenario, because placement is important, I think it fits.
Yeah, for sure. I think there also is some championship utility if you're taking Fearsome Fortress. I was fiddling with some Fearsome Fortress decks the other day. I remember Fearsome Fortress has a surge that is just score this when a fighter gets a guard token. I think they have to be on a feature token in the Fearsome Fortress area.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just another way to do that with these specific factions. And then, it also has synergy there in championship because, like, you want to be on feature tokens in the end phase. So guard, of course, helps with that. So I think it has use in championship. It's good in Nemesis. And obviously, you're taking rivals anyway. So, yeah, solid card. Don't know if it makes a top 10 cut in championship, but maybe.
Yeah, that's the only thing is I don't know if it even makes your 10 in Nemesis, but it's one of those cards where I'm going to think about for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe like the 11th card that you think about cutting or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Friendly Swarm. Heal 1 each friendly fighter that is a beast, companion, minion, and or has one or more Denizen upgrades.
I think as a blanket heal, this can be pretty compelling. Like, there's a lot of pings.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just have this to, like, combat a ping. Or, like, not to combat, but yeah, I guess it does, to counter a ping. But if you have, I guess most beast companions I'm thinking of in minions are 2 wounds. But if there's ever an environment where, like, there's a multi-damage spell or gambit that pings a bunch of people, or who knows, maybe you have 2 fighters, take 2 wounds. Maybe you can heal them back up if they have the right upgrades on them that are giving them these keywords. So I don't think it's bad. I think healing has been much maligned lately, if only because like healing 1 isn't good enough, but healing 2 is sometimes too good, right? So
yeah,
I get the idea of just like healing everyone, But are two wound fighters, because those are the fighters I'm thinking about the most, going to want to just heal one when they're going to get one shot anyways?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. The only multi-target ping I could really think of at this point is, like, there's Cry of Thunder in Curse Breakers. It's whatever. You're probably never going to see that. But what's the Drom prayer where it hits everybody in No Man's Land? Within one hex of No Man's Land? That one's really good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So that's really, like, the only one I'm thinking about where it's like, oh, maybe you can counter that with this. I think it's... One faction that I'm really interested to see this deck with in general is Hrothgorn, Man's Trappers. They have Thrafnir and Lugget and Thwack are two fighters that are three wounds and have the appropriate keywords. So I think there is some utility in that warband, just because it's like Thrafnir is going to have reduced damage by one upgrade and has three wounds and has two dodge with a heal is actually pretty reliably going to stick around. You're right, though. I mean, most factions are just one wound or two wound for beasts or whatever. I will say that the other exception is Exiled Dead, because you're going to put on Dynamic Stabilizer on Dentalos, which is going to reduce all incoming damage by one. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I've had multiple zombies just chilling on one wound each because Dynamic Stabilizer kept them all healthy and hale, and then this is just combos with it. So I don't know if it makes a cut. I agree that I don't think heal cards generally make the cut, especially heal one cards, but maybe, who knows?
Yeah, the Exiled Dead example is pretty compelling, I think. Makes them survive a bit longer. That is interesting.
It could not only pings, but it could also be a nice counter for Scything. If there's a lot of Mighty Swing, if you're like going against Crimson Kira, who goes beast mode and is Scything, if you're going against a lot of Grizel Aranai, who have their Scything flourish card.
That's where I'm thinking about is a Mighty Swing or is Scything that ubiquitous outside of Championship? And I think the answer is no.
And in Aranai- Championship, Scything is usually Mighty Swing for like three damage and not one damage.
Yeah. The Aranai stuff, if Aranai become like super meta, I can see this card with Dynamic Stabilizer being a thing. But it doesn't, that's the only way it will counter the Scything attacks. Otherwise, you just lose three guys.
Yeah, usually you do.
Unless they're going for like a one damage combo, one damage combo, one damage. Well, even then, you still can't play the Gambit. So yeah. I don't know. I think we've spent enough time on this card. I think the answer is probably like leave it.
Yeah, probably leave it. Next, we've got launch and attack. Choose a friendly fighter with one or more upgrades, break one of those chosen fighters' upgrades, then choose an enemy fighter within four hexes of the chosen friendly fighter, deal one damage to the chosen enemy fighter. If the card you broke was a Denizen card, also stagger them.
I really like this card. I think it's going to be one of those cards where you have to really weigh the upgrade you're breaking. But for example, if you need a fighter dead, let's say you're trying to kill a Bahanar, and you get two damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
You finish him off with this card if your fighter has an upgrade. Yes, you might lose a great strength, or you might lose a cleave, or whatever. But it certainly helps with finishing off a fighter. I also think that this can be a great way to start an attack, where in your opponent's power step, maybe you break your upgrade, right, that maybe is not an accuracy or damage-inducing upgrade. You deal a damage, and you stagger them.
Hmm.
And then you go in there with a reroll. That could be a thing also.
Yeah, I do think it is absolutely flexible in that way. And I think you will get the stagger off quite a bit, to your point about using it preemptively to stagger before going in, just because if you are running Beastbound Assault, maybe not in Championship, because, again, the fact that this deck doesn't have a plot card means you might be splashing cards, and I don't think you'd ever splash this by itself without Denizen cards. But in Nemesis or in a Beastbound Assault heavy Championship deck, if you have you're going to have extra Denizen cards, because you're going to bring extra, so you have redundancy to get the upgrades when you need them. And then you can break one or two, and I think that's absolutely fine. And you can even combo it. Like, you can have a fighter that has no upgrades, just like equip the upgrade, immediately break it. Doesn't matter if it did anything anyway. One damage ping in a stagger is usually worth more than an upgrade for the most part. So, yeah, I think this is a really, really good card, at least in Nemesis.
Yes.
Overly Protective is next. Reaction, play this after a successful attack action that targeted a friendly fighter that is a beast companion minion and or has one or more denizen cards. Draw two power cards.
I think this is a really good card. I think it's the best power card we've seen thus far. I think it might be the best card we've seen thus far. It's better than Dark Sacrifice, right? And Dark Sacrifice was very, very well taken because that needed one of your fighters to die. This just needs to hit your fighter. So you have a 4-wound fighter. They take 2 damage. You have a
doesn't even need to hit. It's just targeted.
Even better.
Yeah. Oh, it's even successful. Better. Never mind. It does have to hit.
Does it say that? Yeah. Okay. That's why I was thinking that. Okay.
Yeah,
so, no, you're good. Fine. You take a couple damage, and I get to draw 2 cards. And one of the most powerful resources in this game is power cards. Mm-hmm. Is your draw. If I have more resources than you, then quite aptly, as the card says, that might be your last mistake.
Yeah. I feel like, so the art here is Sanson Farstrider standing over his eagle. I feel like they should just for the fun of it, make Sanson always count as having a denizen upgrade or like being a companion or something. Mm-hmm. Just for the set, because it's like so on theme. But yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, it's funny. There have been phases in, I won't go on too deep of a tangent, but I do think about this sometimes. There have been phases in Underworlds where people are like, draw, you know, it's, you talk about things like draw neutral or draw positive, like Overly Protective is one card that draws 2 cards. So really you're just drawing 1 card because you're spending a card to get 2 cards. So 2 - 1 = 1. So it's like, it's not really that draw positive. You're not getting that much value out of it. It's better to just have a better card and not have to use a draw card. But we've consistently, you know, whether that, you know, you can like philosophize the power level of how much draw is really worth, but in practice, draw cards have been ubiquitous. Like you said, Dark Sacrifice is very common. Duel of Wits is restricted. You know, there's what are there have been other draw cards in the past. Wasn't there one where it was like take a damage on a fighter, draw 2 cards or something like that? Like there have just been a lot of draw cards in the past that have been very well used and very well taken, and I think this is just going to join the same ranks. So,
yeah. Not to rebuttal down the tangent, but I would say this, right? Like, regardless if you're going net plus 1 or whatever, if you have 8 or 9 cards in your deck,
mm-hmm.
that's all you need to win the game. This card gets you those cards faster without exactly. diluting your deck, right? So, I think that's really important as well. Is like, you take Duel of Wits, not because you want Duel of Wits, but you want the other cards in your deck without diluting it, because Duel of Wits isn't going to take away from those your chances of getting that card, right?
Right.
Its sole function is to get you those other 8 or 9, or if you're trying to build for a combo. So,
right. When you take a draw card, you say, I'm taking a smaller deck, but I'm getting it more consistently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is probably a more succinct way to say it.
Tangent aside, our next card is Savage Their Eyes. Choose an enemy fighter within 2 hexes of one or more friendly fighters that are beast companions and minions and or have one or more denizen upgrades. -1 dice from attack actions made by the chosen fighter. It persists until the end of the round or until their next end of their next attack action.
I kind of like cards like these because they make me think. On one hand, it sounds like it's a good card. But is it worth taking, right? Like, if you're going to fight against a warband that's throwing like 2 fury or is lower on accuracy, it may not matter as much. I think ultimately there's always going to be a fighter or 2 in every warband that is fairly accurate. But like, I also think that if you savage their eyes, then they just might put, you know, I think Beastbound Assault, Tooth and Claw is very popular. Tooth and Claw has a lot of accuracy in the deck, right?
There's at least 2 + 1 cards, yeah.
Yeah, so like, this isn't really doing much. And like, if you're turning a 2 smash attack into a 1 smash attack, yeah, it's a big deal, but they still have like a 50% chance to roll a success on the die, right? I think where this card becomes more interesting is if you take a 3 fury fighter onto a 2 fury attack, right? But even then, you can't control dice. Like, they can just roll a crit and this card is useless.
right? If that's the intent.
Yeah, I mean, dice are dice. You could turn a 2-fury attack into a 1-fury attack, and they still roll a crit, right? Like that is absolutely possible. I think this would be really solid in a metagame. Like if we were still in the primacy metagame, and everything was like Molag, Hrothgorn, you know, you dump everything onto like one crush a fighter like Morgok and just let him go crazy, and it's like one turn of debuffing Molag is definitely worth a slot because they're going to just Voltron the crap out of it. But I don't think we're in like a hyper Voltron metagame right now, so that's why it loses some utility. Maybe that metagame changes and this kind of comes and goes, but at the current moment, I would agree it's not like it's not something you can really value very highly.
Yeah, like if we were in an environment where like Molag is always getting three dice, it might be worth dropping him down to two, right?
Yeah,
and then you can just figure out how to use this card in other matchups because it technically does, it is useful.
Sure,
but is it like
useful but not
overly protective useful? I don't know.
Yeah. Then we've got Unexpected Ally. Choose a friendly fighter. The chosen fighter is considered to have one additional supporting fighter when making range 1 or range 2 attack actions. This persists until the chosen fighter makes a successful range 1 or 2 attack action.
Yeah, this is awesome. I mean, first of all, it ties up perfectly with loyal allies, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a great way to score this within your deck if you're playing more of an elite warband. But I think it's interesting. Is it just like a determined effort? Kind of, but it's a determined effort until you get a successful attack, right? So sometimes you can roll the extra die and just still flub your attack or get crit out. But this could be pretty nice if you have like a fighter that makes a lot of attack actions throughout the course of a game, like on a Thundrick or a Hrothgorn, you know, or even a Scything attack.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So it's until you make a successful range 1 or range 2 attack action. So on a Scything attack, would it only last until the first successful in there, or work for the whole Scything attack?
No, it would only last for the first successful. But like I've done the thing where like you're not going to hit every Scything attack. Like, you know, sure, you start a Scything attack, you miss once, but that way you're not penalized. You know, yeah, you still get the half support until you make the attack.
Yeah, absolutely. To the question of is this determined effort? I think it depends on the number of dice you're already rolling. I think when you already have three dice, another dice is diminishing returns and getting support on the three dice is better. Somebody's done the math before. I don't really know it off the top of my head. I think where this really shines is factions that already can get a single support very easily. Like if you had like Hexbanes where you can get the dogs up and running very easily, or Rippas with Bonded, you could just always count as a support. If you already get a support, this is also counting double supports. So if you're on Hammers, you get a support, you have Unexpected Allies, that fighter is hitting on two ups. All those dice are not guaranteed, but they're an 80-something odd percent chance to hit. 83-ish percent chance to hit, I think, is two up. That's really good. Yeah, it's just super solid. And like you said, the combination with loyal allies, among other things. So yeah, great card. And I really like this persists until the fighter makes a range 1 or 2 attack action. So it persists between rounds. You can throw this on a fighter at the end of the round if they're not going to make an attack, or you've drawn it, or like maybe you want to just like hold it for whatever reason. But this effect can persist until round 2. If you play it at the end of round 1 and then you drop a full hand of cards and still have the ongoing effect. So it is it's a solid little card.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, I like it. You can just start out a turn with Hexbanes, play this on a fighter, make a charge, and you get, if you're hitting on Smash, you hit on every dice but a Fury.
Right.
It's pretty nice. As long as you have a dog supporting, of course.
Which you should, yeah.
Every time.
Our next one is Vicious Critters. This is a domain. Haven't seen domains in a while. That's interesting. Range 1 attack actions other than Scything attack actions made by Beast Companions, Minions, and or Denizen Upgrades have Grievous 1. This effect persists until the end of the round or until another domain card is played.
Yeah. So I have some thoughts on this. I just want to mention really quickly, Unexpected Ally does say choose. Great for Skaven.
Oh, true. Yes.
Vicious Critters is cool. Because I would say most beast and minion profiles hitting on Fury. And it's like, they're in situations where you're just crit fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So like I would say half the time or more than half the time you hit, you're rolling a crit. Because even if you roll one Fury, like they can still block, right? But when you roll a crit, it makes their ability to block much... the efficacy of it drops significantly. So I think in this situation, if you're going to roll crits anyways or you're relying on them, this could be solid. It could be great because maybe you're hungering Skaven or lurking Skaven deals 2 damage. Maybe Grisawell deals 4 damage. You know, like it's pretty nice in a certain scenario. Keep in mind it goes both ways. But if I'm playing Exile Dead and you're playing, I don't know, Purifiers, you don't get any benefits.
Yeah.
Unless you have upgrades, right? But I do. So now all my zombies, which I'm already crit fishing on. Well, I guess zombies are a little different because I'm also relying on half supports and maybe full supports. But every once in a while you get a crit, it deals an extra damage. Now Coil isn't always, like even if Coil goes down because he's your 2 damage hitter, this can kind of help spike because eventually you're going to roll crits, right? Through weight of dice. So I actually really like this. Keep in mind, there will be warbands that, like Gore Chosen, will just immediately be able to counter it. But that's okay. Because most situations, aside from like maybe, I guess, Daring Delvers, it's very rare.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Oh, that's right. There are a couple in Daring Delvers. I don't know how commonly they're played. I'd have to review some Nemesis decks.
Yeah, I just started thinking about the Purifier example, and I was like, well, if they're playing Purifiers, they're most likely playing Daring Delvers. So yeah. Maybe.
But still, yeah, I mean... It goes without saying, Exiled Dead, like, oh, range 1 attack actions. You mean, like, how I make 4 range 1 attack actions with a single activation? That's sounds pretty good. I mean, even outside that, like, most beasts or minions are range 1 anyway. I mean, that's Petitioners, it's Ghouls, it's Skaven. They're range 1 dudes anyway, so it's just like a flat buff. And yeah, it can come back to bite you if your opponent is like, you like play this and then your opponent's playing Hrothgar and they're just like, my Thrafnir now has Grievous and just like runs up and wrecks you. But,
well, I wouldn't play it.
If you just wouldn't play it. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't play it. Unless I had like 1 activation left and I was going last and then I was like, hope for a crit. Let's see what happens.
Exactly that. Like you can play around that sort of thing. So I just think it's a solid card. Like if you're playing Beastbound Assault, I think Vicious Critters always goes in the deck.
Yeah, he is not having a good time in that card art.
Oh, yeah, it's Hexbane being assaulted by scorpions. I have a recurring nightmare exactly like this card, actually.
We're going to unpack that later.
Let's go to Well-Trained. Choose a friendly fighter that is a beast, companion, minion, and or 1 or more denizen upgrades. Push the chosen fighter up to 2 hexes.
I think what we need to do moving forward is choose a friendly fighter that is like a BCMD, you know?
Yeah. BCMD, I like that. Yeah.
This card is great. Awesome card. Sidesteps are awesome. Sidesteps would give you an extra sidestep are great. If this card, well, this card will, it will be able to be taken quite often in championship because it doesn't have a plot card restriction. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are going to take it. It's a choose card for warbands that care about that. But it's solid for so many things, even hold objective style, because a lot of your hold objectives are. Warbands have fighters that tend to be minions or companions, so it's a good
stuff. Yeah, I mean,
it's a good one.
Yeah, it's great. I'm nothing to add. I love sidestep. Sidestep, like weirdly, sidestep is one of my favorite cards in the game, even though it's such a basic effect. And sidestep pluses always tickle my fancy.
The best cards in the game are the most basic: +1 strength, +1 wound, move 1 hex, push 1 hex,
kill a fighter. Yeah,
it's simplicity is the name of the game.
Then we have our final card, and it's another domain, actually. Domain. While 1 or more fighters are BCMD, that are BCMD are out of action, +1 dice to range 1 attack actions, other than scything attack actions made by those fighters' warbands. Persistently end around domain wording.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. Keep in mind, it goes both ways, which is a little tricky. But if you're playing like a, if you're playing against Dreppers, they're SOL, right? Like it doesn't matter. It's really good for Exiled Dead. I think in a scenario in which This card is tricky because, like, there are a lot of warbands that are wanting to fight you and wanting to charge up to you and slap you in the face. Giving them an accuracy buff to do that is unfortunate. I think the best way to play this card is if you're really desperate for accuracy and this is your, like, ballsy all-in activation where you need to hit. Or if you have the last activation in the round, you can throw this down, get your plus one dice, hopefully hit the guy you're trying to hit, and then it goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. It is in a lot of ways basically the same as Vicious Critters. Like, a lot of things we say are going to be similar, just that, like, if you're going into an opponent that has no BCMD fighters, this is just, like, such a good card. If your opponent does have them, it becomes weird as to when you use it or not, but, like, the effect is solid. Like, dude, you lose. Think about this in, I know Sepulchral Guard is, like, much maligned, whatever, meme faction, but, like, you lose one petitioner, and now your champion has four dice when he's inspired. Your, what's his name? The prince has four dice inspired. Now your petitioners are hitting on three dice, and that's actually not terrible. Like, it is a board-wide determined effort just for having a fighter dead that's going to be dead anyway. It's, like, it's a really solid buff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zach, we have just now completed the second portion of the deck. Mm-hmm. Which one is your favorite?
God, I think there's a lot of really good ploys in here. I think I'm going to go with Launch and Attack. I mean, mm-hmm. I know picking the ping is kind of like such a nerd thing to do. But I do still like ping cards, and I do like how flexible it is. It can be a finisher. It can be an opener. It can be like a, I don't need this upgrade and this fighter's going to die anyway. Might as well get value out of it. Like, swing card. It's just so flexible and usable. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to pick that one. I didn't think you were going to pick that one. Because I do feel like Overly Protective is probably factually the best card, but I'm not going to pick that one. What do I like? I guess I'm going to go with the Domain card, Vicious Critters. I like the Grievous. I think it's spicy.
It is. Just roll some crits. Where's John when you need him?
That's literally this whole game. That's why I think John, whether you like his content or not, has the best name.
He does.
Because this game is, can you roll a crit? Because if you can, probably going to live or kill.
It's also funny, he moved into more, he does more kill team content now, and kill team also has crits, so he didn't even have to change his name, still works.
Yeah, I think he's petitioning for every game to involve crits, and I think eventually every game will.
I think it's a fun dice mechanic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely agree, Vicious Critters, just Grievous. Grievous, it's like you said, it can come back to bite you in the butt, but it is such a cool effect.
Yeah. It's just really good on Exiled Dead. That's what I keep thinking about.
Yeah. You're going to see some zombies running this. I think we'll see what Adepticon looks like in terms of what players are running and stuff, but I would not be surprised to see, because Adepticon is a Nemesis event, I would not be surprised to see Exiled Dead, Beastbound Assault, at least podium, if not win the whole thing. I think that's... Well, let's take
really, a look at the upgrade first. You think that's a... We're going to actually, yes, let's finish the deck, but that's a really interesting thought that I want you to follow up on, because that's a very bold claim.
We'll see.
I think any good player could learn this, like that deck, in a couple days, but to win the whole event.
Let's talk about it later. Let's get through the upgrades.
Okay. All right. Haven't heard this phrase in a while, but Amberbone Flute. Reaction. After this fighter's activation, give this fighter a charge token. Then reveal cards from the top of your power deck, one by one, until you reveal a Denizen upgrade. Add that card to your hand, then, or if you did not reveal a Denizen upgrade, place the revealed cards in your power deck and shuffle that deck. So effectively, get a charge token, find the upgrade of your choice that's a Denizen, and put it in your hand and show your opponent.
It's an interesting effect, but I don't know how good it is. I mean, it... For all intents and purposes, for those of you who don't play a lot of card games, this sort of effect is called tutor, where draw is you draw a card, but tutor is draw a specific card. Effectively, this is when this fighter's activated, tutor one, because usually you're charging, unless you're unless you're thinking about activating that fighter multiple times, it's just going to be like, you activate it, you tutor a card, and then maybe that card is useful. Denizen effects are good. They enable your other cards. They make your other fighters better. But if I want to tutor, I would rather tutor for a ploy than an upgrade. And that's the only thing. And it's slow, right? Like, if you draw this on round three, you're only getting one effect out of it for the reaction. So I think it's a little too slow for my taste, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad upgrade.
I don't think it's a bad one. It's just literally Bag of Tricks, but for Denizen upgrades.
Bag of Tricks requires an action. This at least lets you do something, and then Bag of Tricks.
Yeah, that's fair. So it quite arguably is better. I don't know. I mean, I think we'll look through the Denizen car upgrades and see. There's a bunch of them. If you really want one early on, cool. And I guess we talked about this earlier, right? Where it's like, we talked about deck dilution and drawing. I think the difference with upgrades is it requires a glory. There is still a price to be paid. So I'm not really sure if this is like the move, but I guess if you really want to tutor it out, you can tutor it out. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah. To just touch on deck dilution. Yeah, it is effectively saying you're running 9 upgrades because this basically turns. If this is the only upgrade in your hand, now it becomes this plus another Denizen upgrade. But yeah, to your point, you have to get it upgraded in the first place.
Let's go to, I think what we do is we go through all the Denizen upgrades, and then we're going to ask the question, is it worth to flute over it?
Right.
Right? So, Countless Familiars is a Denizen upgrade. When you give this to a fighter, give that fighter and then one other friendly fighter within 2 hexes one familiar counter. When a fighter has one or more familiar counters, that fighter is considered to have one additional Denizen upgrade.
It's a big enabler effect, right? Because, like, this can't, if you're a faction that doesn't have the BCDM keywords, this can be a good way to spread that out. You know, get multiple fighters counted as if you have Denizen upgrades. It helps the, what is the objective? Whatever the objective was where you had to have 3 Denizen upgrades on one fighter.
Keen Collector,
thank you. It helps that. I just don't think the effect is strong enough for an upgrade. I mean, especially in Championship, you never take this because the effect is not strong enough compared to things like Great Fortitude, Great Strength, Weapons, etc. In Nemesis, it really depends on how good your upgrades in your faction are, but I think most faction upgrades are going to be better than this effect. So, I don't know. It does nothing for me.
It does nothing for me as well. I think even in Rivals, like, unless I need Keen Collector to be scored, then I guess I'd throw it on there. But other than that, I wouldn't even waste the glory on it. So we're not fluting this one.
No, not at all.
Okay, next one is Deadly Swarm, and it's an attack action upgrade that has Denizen as well. It is a melee range 1 attack, 2 smash, with the damage being an asterisk. The attack has Ensnare and Swarm. Swarm states the damage characteristic is equal to the number of Denizen upgrades this fighter has. This action, attack action's characteristic cannot be modified.
So there's the synergy here with Countless Familiars. Like, if you have this plus Countless Familiars, it's two upgrades for a 2 smash damage, 3 attack. Ooh, nifty. Just take Boarding Pike, yeah. you never take this in Championship. In Nemesis,
don't even take this in Nemesis.
Probably not. I mean, yeah, probably not. We're gonna see more better Denizen cards in a little bit. Maybe if you're just really, you're like, I need one more Denizen card to consistently activate all my stuff. But even then, I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we've talked about, like, the BC MD or whatever DM is, like, you're gonna have a lot of minions like weapon. You know, attack action upgrades. But in a vacuum, this is a range 1, 2 smash, 1 damage attack with Ensnare.
Which is not very good.
Yeah, just give them, like, Swordbreaker. It's 3 smash, 2 damage, you know?
And some essentials, yeah.
Like, it's, and then I'm sure any faction deck with an attack action upgrade is better than this one.
100%.
The compounding effect is good. But even if you throw, like, 4 up Denizen upgrades on this card, on a fighter, then you have a 4 damage attack. It's still only 2 smash, right?
Yeah. 2 smash is just... that's so season 2, man. Nobody
it's
has
too random.
two smash. Nobody has two smash attacks anymore. It's just not a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to another Denizen card because we are not fluting that one either. Mm. Ever Hungry Fiend. You cannot give this to a fighter in your territory. Do not break this card if this fighter is in your territory. That's nice. When this fighter makes an attack action that targets an adjacent fighter, this fighter is considered to have one additional supporting fighter.
You know, it's a really good card. Bonded. And this is like, it's not quite bonded because you're not getting the defensive benefit of it, but it is for all intents and purposes for range one fighters, the offensive side of bonded. And that's really good. And then you can combo this with Unexpected Ally, and that's two power cards have full supports with nobody around you. I think this is a great card. I think it would be busted if it did the defensive side was supported. But yeah,
that would take away from the coolness of the bonded ability.
Yeah. But
the uniqueness.
Yeah. But yeah, this is just a very solid upgrade. And I would absolutely Amberbone this flute this out.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm fluting in the, like, just because I don't have the card in my deck. But yeah, this could be one that you flute out. Forest Riders have a card called Helpful Whispers that gives them a half support on all attack actions. As long as, I don't know if there's a range limitation on it. It's been a while. But that was an auto include every time I played Forest Riders.
Oh, yeah.
So I like this one. More accuracy is always a good thing.
And it's a Denizen.
So yeah, if I had the flute in my deck, I would flute this out. Sure. One hundo. Okay. We mentioned Vortimus earlier. Here he is. Helpful Little Finder. Another Denizen upgrade. At the start of the action phase, give this fighter one upgrade from your hand. Then draw one power card and break this card.
First of all, I love this card art. It's a cute little bird. I like cute little birds. that's it. That's all I have to say. This is weird. Yeah, it is. It's like a tutoring deck thinning card where it's like, I guess one of the designs of this deck is just like have cards that make your deck smaller and smaller until you can get to the bottom cards of your deck, which is cool. It's like an interesting design.
I think the design also kind of makes sense in the fact that like you have these helpful denizens. Mm-hmm. Like they're helping you, right? So what do denizens do? They probably give you shit that helps you kill people, right?
Yeah.
Or survive against people trying to kill you. So in the form of like how that would function in the game itself is giving, like letting you draw more cards, which makes sense to me.
It does make sense. I think this does work because like you equip, so say you have this in round one, you equip it. It allows you to score some of your cards that require you to be a denizen. And then next turn you're like, all right, now I can get rid of this for a more impactful upgrade that is going to let me, like, you know, do combat or survive better. And so you kind of replace the denizen keyword with something more important. And then you draw a card to replace it. So it's like, I definitely see the value and utility in this. And I think this could, I think if you're really leaning into, like, the tutor draw stuff, this could absolutely make the cut in Nemesis. I think it's way too niche to make the cut in Championship. I think it's actually really good in Rivals, if you're running this as your Rivals deck, but it remains to be seen if people do that.
Yeah, I mean, do you think spending a glory to draw one card and then losing the Denizen keyword is worth it?
Maybe.
Because it's not even a choice. You have to do it.
Yeah, that's true. I think if you're replacing it with, for instance, Ever Hungry Feed, I absolutely would. Like, turn one, Helpful Little Finder when you're in enemy territory. Start of turn two, Ever Hungry Fiend. Hello, now I have supports and I have thinned my deck down a little bit. I mean, it really depends on what you draw, right?
But what you're doing is, so let's say, so the concept of this card is in the end of the round or in the end phase, you put this on your fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Then what that does is it lets your next upgrade be free, right? And then you draw a power card and then you break this card. But doesn't it just make sense to just take an upgrade that's worth being put on in the first place?
Yeah,
you're paying the glory for the future upgrade.
Yeah,
and the only benefit is drawing the card.
Yeah, it's not a free card. It, like I said, the only effect here is the deck thinning, and I don't think that's enough of an effect for a Championship. I think maybe it can be in, the only reason I think it can be in Nemesis is because compared to Championship, in Nemesis you have like your uber powerful power cards are fewer and further between, right? Because you're not putting in 20 of the best cards, you're putting in the 20 best cards you can get, which is not going to be 20 great cards. It's going to be like 10 really good cards and 10 that are okay. And if you can get to those 10 really good cards consistently throughout a game, I think it might find use, or any of these, you know, card replacement type cards might find use in Nemesis, just because it's like, man, I really need to get to, you know, I'm playing Exile Dead, I really need to get to Dynamic Stabilizer because I just don't, I can't function without it. Well, this helps you get one card closer to it or to it, right? Like, And I think that's the only reason I'm considering it. Like in Championship, you're like, well, I just have 10 good upgrades, like whatever. But in Nemesis, you're usually like, I've got 4 or 5 good upgrades, and then the rest are like situationally okay. And then this is a situationally okay one that helps you get to your better ones. So That's why I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I wouldn't take it in Nemesis, but I understand your reasoning for sure.
Cool. Agree to disagree?
Yes, sir. This is the card I was talking about earlier with Golgok looking really happy. I can see you smiling. He just looks so happy.
He's so happy looking.
The funny thing is the mascot, or the maggot or whatever, the slug, doesn't even have a face, but it looks happy too.
It also looks, I was going to say, it also looks happy. They're just buddies. Wow.
They're buddies of filth. Well, I said the word mascot because the card is called Inspiring Mascot. Denizen. You cannot give this to a leader or a large fighter. At the end of the action phase, heal one this fighter, then push this fighter up to 1x.
I think that's a pretty good card. It's a delayed +1 wound, so it's not going to save you. But like putting this on a 4-wound fighter kind of gives them survivability without making them large. There's not a whole lot in the game right now that can spike 4 damage in a single attack. So it's like, generally, you're just going to want to hold this in your hand until the last activation or the end of the round. Or it has to be last activation because you won't get it in the end phase. Wait until the last activation, slap it on a wounded fighter, heal them, give them a free sidestep. Cool. It's solid. I don't think it's a bad card at all. Again, heal effects, not as good as +1 wounds, but I think it's really good in Nemesis where there's less spike damage and there's going to be less +1 wounds just in general. Like there's no great fortitude in this deck, period. So you might as well take the next best thing. So yeah, I think it's great in Nemesis, okay in Championship.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's effectively Silent Step. But they just added a heal onto it. Does the heal matter? Situationally, I think if you want Silent Step, which in a warband that focuses on entering enemy territory, or at least holding objectives or standing on them outside of your own territory, that can make the difference, right? If you're 1 hex short, boom, you're there. The heal is cool. I guess it reminds me a lot of Healing Factor in Marvel Crisis Protocol, where like characters like Wolverine and Sabretooth, at the end of their activation, they can heal. Mm-hmm. So you have to like really think about, like, is it worth moving my fighter early so they can get the heal, or do I think they can survive any incoming attacks and then actually benefit from the heal from any potential new damage, right? Mm. And that's the way I try to think of this card, is that, The problem with thinking that way, though, is Underworlds isn't a game where, like, your fighters have, like, they don't have longevity on the battlefield. Like, when they're dead, they're dead, and you can spike kill people quite often in this game. So, I don't care about the healing factor. I'm not even going to consider it. It's just a nice to have on a Silent Step. That's what this card is.
Yeah.
I think that's how you should view it.
Yeah, I now that you say that, I do kind of agree. In Silent Step, like you said, in effect, like there are a number of cards that are beyond objectives. It's not, I wouldn't say this is like a hold objective deck. This is not a supremacy deck, but it's like, it's pretty close to it. And having Silent Step is good. So yeah, that's a good shout. I would definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah. Thanks. It's cool.
Yeah,
for sure. And the name is great.
And the art's great.
And the art is great. That's right. Are we fluting Denizen, Inspiring Mascot?
I wouldn't be mad to flute it out. Like, so flute is you draw cards until you see a Denizen card. And if this was the Denizen card I saw, I'd be like, oh yeah, I can make use of this.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying is like, do you take flute? Like, do you take this card in your deck with flute so that you can, if you happen to come across it, it's worth it?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, so far we're at Ever Hungry Fiend in this. Like, I don't think I would flute Helpful Little Finder, but I think I would definitely flute this.
Yeah. Interesting. I agree. Next one is Kindred Affinity. not a denizen card. At the start of your action phase, draw the top card of your power deck and reveal it. If that card is a denizen upgrade, give that upgrade to this fighter. It does not cost any glory points. Otherwise, add that card to your hand.
The first time I read this, I had to sit and think about it for like 5 minutes. It's an insanely powerful effect that is dead in round three. If you draw this at the start of round three, this is just a dead card. That's really scary. If you draw this in round one, that is two turns where you have a 6-card hand or a 5-card hand and a free upgrade.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy crap. That's like really, really powerful. But like, if you draw it round one and you don't get any like glory, if you like have a dead round one, at which point it like kind of doesn't matter because you're kind of losing the game at any point. But like, if you draw this round three, if this isn't your round three hand, I think it feels awful. But I think it's good enough in round one and two that you still put it in your deck. I think you may even put this in your deck in championship, just because it's like, in championship, you don't have any denizen cards, whatever. Your opponent can know one card in your hand, but you still have a 6-card hand. That's terrifying. That's really good, right? Am I crazy?
You're not crazy, because if that card is a good card, and they've already expected you to have that card, yes, you're giving them quote-unquote perfect information, but they don't know when you're going to use it. It might actually affect their game plan. Because sometimes you're going to be like, well, I hope they don't have this card, YOLO charge. But it's like, oh, they do have this card. Mm-hmm. Do I make this charge now? Do I do something else? So I think sometimes giving information to your opponent is a detriment to them. The way that I view this card, which I completely agree with you, getting this in the early game makes it very strong. The way that I look at it is that it's like an investment. Like you're investing in a stock or even like digital currency, like a Bitcoin. You throw a glory into it. And you hope it pays dividends, right? But if you make that investment too late, i.e. you draw it in round three, then yeah, it's a waste of money or a waste of glory. Or maybe not even glory, but like a spot in your deck, right? In terms of resources. Ultimately, the question that I think you have to ask yourself, and I'm going to ask you, Zach, but also listener, you should ask yourself this question. Do you think the risk is worth the reward?
I absolutely do, because I think round one, is you're getting two draws or two upgrades out of this, and that's crazy. Round two, you're getting one. That's still really good. I mean, if you think of it, round two, like, it is, if you think of it in terms of, like, the card itself does nothing, so if you get one use out of it, it's kind of like a replacement card. Like, again, we're talking about thinning your deck, cycling through it faster. We have a deck that wants to cycle itself and get down just to the good stuff that makes itself function. I think it's worth it. I think it's just worth it in every format. So maybe I'm overvaluing it. Maybe I'm going to play it and I'm going to be like, ah, wow, I really wish this is just a boarding pike. Or maybe I wish this was just, you know, a great strength or something. But I don't know. I think there's definitely value to be had here.
I agree. I think I'm going to be more reserved on this one. I can definitely see games where this is like so, so good. You get two extra power cards potentially over the course of the game, right? Because even if you play that upgrade, you still cycled further, right? So it's not going to clog up your hand. So you're going to get guaranteed, at least if you draw it in round one, two extra cards. And oftentimes that's enough, right? Because if you just draw standard and assuming you have no cards left, you're only going through 15 with no other draw.
Right.
With this deck, with Kindred Affinity, some of the tutors, you have a very realistic chance of going through the whole deck. But even if you just took Kindred Affinity and the other card that's a Gambit with Farstrider on it, then you go through, what is that, 19 cards in your deck?
Yeah.
You get the 15 that you go through plus 4? Yeah, that's solid.
Yeah. You being able to guarantee, like, this was actually something people were talking about. Again, I'm going on a short tangent. When they changed the mulligan, there was somebody who was talking, or there were a few people who were talking about it. It's like, yes, the mulligan does mean that you're not throwing things away. You're not getting rid of cards that you otherwise would want to see. But it does mean you can't guarantee. Because the old mulligan basically was, I get rid of these, but I guarantee see every other card in my deck. And you don't get that anymore. Beastbound Assault can't... If you take all the draw cards in Beastbound Assault, can mean you guarantee see every single card in your deck. Mm-hmm. And that's... I don't know. There's probably something to that.
Yeah, but you know... If you just look at the deck as a whole, just from what we've seen so far, like four or five of those cards are like helping you see other cards.
Right.
You have Kindred Affinity, you have a Flute, you have the Gambit. So this might be by design, right? Clearly it's by design, but I'm just trying to think like Championship or even Nemesis. Are the two draw cards I'm taking, Kindred Affinity and what is that Gambit called? Overly Protective?
Yes.
Are those, like, even if you just take those two, could be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It could be worth it.
Especially because it's split between power and upgrade. Like, it's not, you're not replacing two power cards, you're not replacing two upgrades, you're replacing one of each, which feels very even and very worthwhile. So,
I will say the caveat with this card is you're going to want to put this on a card that's probably your leader, because if it is a Denizen upgrade, you have to give that upgrade to the fighter.
Right.
You can't, like, you know, like automatically goes. So if you have a strategy or a synergy that you're trying to execute, make sure you put this on the fighter that needs the upgrades. So
how does that work with Inspiring Mascot? Because it says you cannot give this to leader or large fighter. You have Kindred Affinity on a leader or large fighter, and then it reveals and draws Inspiring Mascot. Does the give it to this fighter override the you cannot give this, or would it just break?
No, it doesn't break. So you, since if let's say Kindred Affinity is on your leader, right, or a large fighter,
mm-hmm.
because that specifically says you can't give it to them, it would just go to your hand because it says otherwise, add that card to your hand.
Oh, yeah, otherwise.
So you wouldn't be able to give the upgrade to the fighter.
Yeah,
it's illegal.
Interesting. Still good getting it in your hand.
Yeah, you still cycle, mm-hmm. right? So.
Yeah, it's cool. Long story short, good upgrade, I think. I think we both agree.
Yeah, I think it's good situationally.
Mm.
Like, can I see myself not taking this card? Yes. Can I see myself taking this card and it winning me games? Yes. Can I see this myself taking this card and it doing absolutely nothing? Yes. Right? That's kind of where I'm at. Which, you know, in a game where you want a lot of consistency, I'm not really sure. But
it feels like a card that needs to be playtested a bit before we can kind of sit here and say what we would rate it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but that's this whole podcast, right?
For sure.
We haven't played it. We're just hot taking.
Oh, yeah. My hot take is I want to put Kindred Affinity in every deck because I love this effect. But my more measured take is I want to play at least like 10 games with this and see how I feel about it afterwards.
Yeah. My hot take would be I want to hear what you say after those 10 games and you tell me that it's not worth it. I hope. But actually, I don't hope because I want you to enjoy it, right?
So. Yeah. You want new cards to be fun.
That's right. Okay, well, a couple more left here. Stalking Terror is a Denizen card. When another friendly fighter within 2 hexes of this fighter that is a BCMD makes a range 1 or range 2 attack action, this fighter supports that fighter.
That's a really good card because...
Solid.
I mean, just in general, giving out support when you're not in a general support position is good. But like BCMD, these keywords that we keep talking about, like the factions that have them are usually like group up aggro. Either they are big model count and you're going to be close to each other anyway, or it's like, you know, the card art for this is the Sepulchral Warden and then a Petitioner and then like some feral wolves that are your denizens. You know, you put this on a fighter, and like the warden is usually near a petitioner, or like the warden is usually near, or a petitioner is usually near something else. Like it just comes up. Like this is just the positional effect of this. You might look at this and go like, oh, but it has a positional requirement to get the support. But like that positional effect just happens for these warbands. So I think this is a great card. Again, if you are a BCMD faction that has these keywords innately, great card. Everybody else, you got to draw Denizen cards. Maybe it's good. Maybe not.
Yeah, just throw this bad boy on Daintelos and say go.
I mean, yeah, that's obviously... I didn't want to say it, but you know, if you're going to say it, then yeah.
You did.
I was trying to talk about cool. Sepulchral Guard. They're such a cool, not good, fun, meme faction, and you're just like, no, exiled, dead.
Exiled it. I mean, it's good with Spikeclaw. He tends to be like in that 2 range away from his fighters supporting them. Even aggressive warbands like
Hrothgorn.
What's his name? Hrothgorn for sure. But even the leader for the Sarakar.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for him too. You know, he tries to stay in that 2-3 range of the combat. So, me likey.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's a great flute flute pick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Especially
if you top deck Stalking Terror off flute, you're chilling.
And it's a denizen, so it can come off Kindred Affinity to go directly onto a fighter. Like, you have Kindred Affinity, you get Stalking Terror with it, and then you can use the support from Stalking Terror on your first activation charge without having to equip it. Like, yeah, it combos very well within the deck.
Yeah. This next card, I think, is very powerful. Unsettling Follower. Denizen, enemy fighters within one hex of this fighter cannot hold objectives.
We've seen this effect before, right? So, I know Spinefin Toxin makes it so you can't hold objectives.
Yeah.
There was a Metalith, I think, in Beastgrave that did this?
I don't know, maybe? Or, well, I'll tell you why I like it.
Oh, sorry, I was going to I remembered it was when it was, I can't remember the name of the card, it was when this fighter's holding an objective, no other fighters in that territory are considered holding objectives. Don't remember the name of that upgrade. It was a tech pick that people did.
Oh, the rod.
The
Mithril Rod or some staff. Or
Nullstone Rod or something like that?
No, Nullifying.
Nullifying Rod, yeah.
Rod.
Yeah, I remember.
Skullbreaker was on it.
It screwed me in one game, and I, like, never forgot that card. Anyway, that was a good card. This is also a really good card, and it synergizes with at least one other objective in this deck where you have to be there's two other objectives in this deck where you have to be holding more than enemies. That's a good card right there.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too, because, like, if you play this with a warband that has fighters that return back from dead, you can really manipulate this. Like, this in a Grimwatch deck is pretty dirty.
Mm-hmm.
This, because then it threatens your backline. Like, you have one fighter all the way in the back side of your board. Well, Ghoul Call places them, you know, yeets them into the corner. But then, like, they still have to make the attack, right? But now they don't even have to. They can just walk up next to your fighter. And now you're not holding the objective. Which means you don't score glory. It could deny you the tiebreaker. Helps me score glory. So on and so forth. Which is really cool. This also gives you, I guess, redundancy, even if you don't use it in that way. Where, like, oftentimes you're making a charge hoping you get the drive back. Now it doesn't matter. You get the kill, or they still can't score the objective. It's solid.
Yeah, I really like Grimwatch is a great shout. Another fact, like I said at the beginning, but I think Spikeclaw Swarm with this deck is super interesting tech. Because, like, you res your rats in enemy territory, and if your last activation, like, it's turn three, you're the final activation, and you just go, oh yeah, I'm just going to res my rat right next to your opponent, or right next to your fighter holding an objective, and then just equip this and be like, all right, cool, GG. Like, that's terrifying. Like, that can ruin people's game plans with one diceless activation, and that's awesome.
That's the kind of consistency you love, though, right?
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. And because it's so strong, it is just one hex.
Mm-hmm.
So, it balances out.
If it was two hexes, it would be busted, but yeah.
Yeah, if it was, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, this is a very strong effect. Would you want to see this off of either Flute or Kindred Spirits or Kindred Affinity?
Kindred Affinity, maybe not, just because, like, I maybe want to control it on the fighter I have.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I could do is, like, position my fighter in the spot that I want him to, and then last power step of the round, or even the game, slap Unsettling Follow on there and ruining their game plan.
Right.
Right, while minimizing the number of cards they have in their deck to be able to counter said effect. The earlier you do this, or the automatically it comes on through Kindred Affinity, the more time that they can hold cards to try to stop it from being actually a factor. So not for Kindred Affinity. If this came from the flute, I actually still don't like it because you have to reveal it to your opponent. I want this to be a gut.
Oh, yeah. It's not a...
I want it to be a surprise.
You take away the surprise factor for sure.
Yeah. I want them to be like, man, I really hope they don't have Unsettling Follower. And then boom. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. My little gargoyle on my shoulder just ruined your day.
I do love...
That's the fun.
Dude, I love how every single beast that's on one of these cards is something different. It's so cool.
Yeah. I will say, I feel like we've seen a lot of flying mosquito spider looking things.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it is Gur, the Realm of Beasts, so that's kind of the generic imagery. Not surprised.
Yeah. One of the cards was like, the enemy of my enemy is like a way of life in Gur or something.
Oh yeah,
it was, I was like, that's so funny.
The enemy of my enemy describes every living thing in the Gnarl Wood.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's true. Alrighty, last one. Vicious Familiar, Denizen. Reaction, use this during an adjacent enemy fighter's attack action. after the attack roll. If the attack roll contained two or more attack dice, the attacking player must pick one dice from the attack roll. Ignore the result on the dice.
I have a very hard time. I have a very hard time evaluating this card. So, just so we're clear, let's talk this through. After your opponent rolls two or more attack dice, the opponent must pick one attack dice from the attack roll. But failed rolls are still considered part of the roll.
Correct.
Right. So the best case scenario for this is your opponent rolls all successes, which is easier on two dice. So it's somewhat... The best case scenario is your opponent charges up adjacent to you with a two-hammer attack, and they roll two successes, and you take one away, and it's easier to block. A lot of times they're going to be rolling three dice, and it's going to be like a hit and two misses, or like a crit and two misses, or like a hit and a crit and a miss, and they're just going to get rid of a miss, and it's not going to do anything. So your opponent is attacking you. Your opponent gets to choose what dice goes away. They're just going to choose a miss. I mean, there will be times where this saves your bacon because your opponent rolls two hits and you discard one and then you just roll a block and you're fine. Or like your opponent rolls up and rolls a crit and a hit and they discard the hit and then you roll a crit and you're fine. Like, it will save your bacon in certain scenarios, but I think more often than not, they're rolling at least one miss and they're just going to choose the miss to discard. Maybe, like, it, in some ways, this reminds me of Silent Helm, where the opponent got to have one less crit, and it's almost like a psychological factor where it's like, well, actually, you know, your opponent, so Silent Helm was your opponent is counted as having one less crit in their attack roll, like it downgrades one, the first crit into a hit. And so, you know, numerically, your opponent is killing you with hits just as often as they're killing you with crits. So it wasn't like, it was good, and it was very strong. It was good enough to get restricted, but it wasn't like insanely powerful defensive card that was just always happening on every single attack. And this is the same thing, where it's like, you know, sometimes this will be extremely powerful, and then sometimes it will not be. Like, it's a weird card. I find it hard to evaluate. I probably won't put it in my deck just because it makes me angry to look at because I can't really evaluate it.
I think I'm inclined to agree that it's not a card I would take, but I think it's interesting to consider the use cases here. In Championship, I think a lot of people take Branching Fate, and this could potentially ruin a score, right? Like, maybe it's like, I don't know if it stops the one from rolling only successes. In fact, it might make that one easier to score.
It is worth noting that if you take, it has combos with Savage Their Eyes, which is the pick an enemy within two minus one dice to them. So you can turn a three dice stack into a two dice attack, and then two dice attack has a pretty good chance of both getting hits, and then you can make them discard one, and it's like, there's like some stacking defensive bonuses there, but that is a one-off defensive.
Yeah, I wouldn't say a two-dice attack is more likely to roll successes, but...
Two-dice attack is more likely... I guess... I'm saying it's more likely to get two successes on three dice than on three on three dice.
Yeah, I get you. That's fair. I would say I don't ever want to be in a position where I'm hoping my opponent rolls a success.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I think if we were back in, you know, like we were joking before, I think if we were back in like a season two meta where most attacks were like two smash, this would be a really, really good card. But we've kind of power crept into an era where most good attacks are either three fury or even three smash. And because of that, I just don't think this is good enough to make the cut.
Yeah, I think you're right. The ideal scenario is they roll two hits, you take one hit away. Or they roll two crits, you take one crit away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, because at the end of the day, it just makes your defensive roll a little bit easier. If they roll two crits, you have to roll two crits back. You take one of those crits away, you only have to roll one crit back. If they roll a crit and a hit, you have to roll a crit and a success. You take the success away, you still have to roll one crit. Still unlikely that you'll roll the crit, given statistics, but better than the alternative, I guess.
Yeah, it's a defensive card, but it's a confusing defensive card, and I just don't think it's worth the slot.
I agree. Though I think there's potential.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't hate to have this in Rivals, because you have to take it. I think it will come up quite often, especially because Rivals doesn't have a whole lot of, like, Tooth Claw has a bunch of accuracy, but not a lot of faction decks have accuracy. In Nemesis, if your faction deck is like really lousy on upgrades, especially defensive upgrades, you might consider it and just be like, it's not a great defensive upgrade, but maybe it'll save my bacon sometimes. And I think you wouldn't regret having it in there if you don't have anything better, but it's like, yeah.
Well, that makes me actually want to ask you a question, but before we do that, let's wrap this segment up. Overall, we've gone through all the upgrades. This last one's a bit confusing, up in the air, but do you have a favorite, Zach?
I know the easy one. I still love Kindred Affinity. I love the value you can get out of this card. It might not be the strongest upgrade in the set, but it is, I think, one of the coolest effects we've seen in a very long time.
I think that's fair. For me, it's Unsettling Follower. I think that's just a really cool tech piece.
Yeah.
It might end up being too hard to use, but I think some warbands will find it quite easy to use, like Grimwatch or something like that. Skaven, etc. Okay, so that covers the deck. I think, as per usual, we're just going to give our overall thoughts on the deck. But I guess this might tie into that question, or that summary, rather. So, you mentioned that, you know, this, if people are playing Beastbound Assault, this might come up a lot. But the interesting thing that I find about Beastbound Assault is that I think it's more of a boon to championship play than for Nemesis and Rivals. I'll tell you why. There's no plot card, right? So all the championship people are going to just find the best cards that they can pick, throw it in their decks. For Nemesis, this deck is not better than Tooth and Claw, Daring Delvers, or Fearsome Fortress, in my opinion. So, like, in that environment, like, are we even going to see Beastbound Assault that much?
I think it's on the level of... It's not better than Tooth and Claw. I think Tooth and Claw is probably still singularly the best Nemesis deck for Rivals as a format, with Daring Delvers kind of being shortly behind and Fearsome Fortress shortly behind that. I think this is at least on the level of Fearsome Fortress, personally. But I think it's very faction-dependent. I think with the right faction, with a faction that does have Beast Companions or Minions, a lot of those keywords baseline, I think this may be on the level of at least Daring Delvers. Maybe not Tooth and Claw. So it's weird, right? Because Tooth and Claw is, I think, Tooth and Claw and Daring Delvers, I think people are like, oh, those are the two de facto best decks for the format. But like, Tooth and Claw doesn't synergize with a lot of factions, right? Tooth and Claw doesn't really synergize with like Exile Dead, for example. We keep talking about it. It doesn't synergize really well with high model count warbands. It doesn't synergize with anybody that has range 2. It doesn't synergize with, or range 3 for that matter. It doesn't synergize with factions that want to like stand on objectives and not be aggro. I think this just synergizes with different factions, and the ones it synergizes with, it, like, the power level varies wildly depending on who you're wielding it with and what cards you take from that faction. So I think it's really hard to say, like, oh, it's just worse than the other ones. Like, yeah, if you threw this on Sons of Elmore, it's going to be bad. I mean, everything's bad with Sons of Elmore. But, like, if you threw this on, if you threw this on, for instance, just look through here real quick.
Let's say Wurmspat.
Yeah, Wurmspat. Like, you could find some utility with Wurmspat with this, but it's not really what they're looking for. They're so much better with Tooth and Claw. But, like,
even Daring Delvers.
But, like, Exile Dead, they auto-score a lot of these objectives. I think I keep going back to Mantrappers or Black Powders because they're very similar in setup. Both those factions auto-score a lot of these cards and get a lot of synergy out of these cards. Like, is it more than they get out of Tooth and Claw? Maybe, maybe not. But, like, I think it's at least worth exploring for some of these factions, you know?
I think it might be worth exploring. I think I can very quickly tell you right now, just looking at all the warbands, which, and I think you could too. I think most people could. They just tell you, well, that's going to work, that's not going to work, that's going to work, that's not going to work.
Right, yeah.
Like, do I think Exile Dead with Beastbound Assault rivals maybe like GSP or Hexbanes with Tooth and Claw? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But do I think Spikeclaw Swarm is a good pick for this deck as well? Yeah, for sure. But ultimately, I think outside of maybe one to three warbands, I personally don't think you're going to see this a lot.
And I think that's okay, though. I've been thinking about Nemesis as a format And I know, again, we're in tangent mode now, and this has been already kind of a long episode.
They're always long.
They're always long. Nemesis as a format is like, it's only going to get, right now it feels a little underdeveloped, because we only have, up until this deck, we've only had three decks. There's Illusory Might. It's fine. It works with like two warbands sometimes. We've only had three decks, and they all function fairly similarly. I think it's okay to release Nemesis decks that work with a very small subset of the factions, as long as it provides a new and interesting playstyle. And I think, you know, the idea is that when you have a full season of Nemesis, you're going to have 24 decks, or, well, you should have, what, 4 6-month seasons, so you'll have 16 decks available. I don't think they should all just be aggro. I don't think they should all be ubiquitously usable by everybody. I think it's cool to have these decks where it's like, this works with like 5 to 10 factions in the game, maybe more as more come out and have these keywords. But it's not really usable by anybody else. And it just provides variance to the game. So I think, yeah, it sucks that this is not like, I mean, man, you can't use this with like, Starblood Stalkers, which are 6 models and have none of the appropriate keywords, and also don't really want to be doing a lot of the stuff this deck is doing. But it is good for Exaltet. It is good for Spyclaw Swarm. It is good for, you know, maybe Grimwatch. And I think that's okay. I think that's cool. And I think it is a worthy addition to the format, personally.
Mm. I think that was really well said, actually, Zach. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of situations where a lot of decks can feel repetitive. I think there is a sense of similarity between the decks that we've already seen. And this one shares similarities too, where it's all about entering the enemy's territory or conquering no man's land, perhaps, you know, standing on objectives, doing some stuff like that. That being said, you know, there are limitations in the game, but that's another conversation. Yeah. So,
but I think point you're is right. That it allows factions that can't do it with the existing decks, even if it does ultimately end up in a very similar style of play where it's midboard mashup with some token stuff, like objective token stuff. Even if it is a very similar play style, it allows other warbands that can't currently do it to do it, and in a slightly different manner. And I think that's important. I think that's important for the game.
I agree. And that's what I was trying to say ultimately is I think it's fair if Exiled Dead, Spyclaw Swarm, and 2 or 3 other warbands have found a Rivals deck that works best for them. And I think anybody can use it technically, right? I think the cool thing about all these decks is that they can function with every single warband.
Mm.
And then it's up to you to pick and choose whichever ones you want. So I like it. I dig it. I think it's fair. The last thing I want to talk about on this episode was you made a very bold claim earlier that you think Exiled Dead would win Adepticon with Beastbound Assault.
I didn't say would, I said could.
Could win, if not podium. Those are your words.
Yes.
What do you think is the reason behind that? Like, yeah, there's just some great synergies here. But, like, Exiled Dead kind of have the same weaknesses still, right? Like, so this just makes them competitive now.
It makes them competitive, which is why I say could, is that you still need to have a skilled hand, and you need somebody who knows the faction very well. The reason it really jumps out to me is that the thing holding Exiled Dead back in formats like Nemesis and Rivals, the thing that made Exiled Dead really good in Championship is that they had a lot of glory to combat their glory bleed. A faction like Exiled Dead or any other Swarm Warband, especially Swarm Warband that wants to move forward and engage with the enemy, is going to bleed glory. You have a lot of 2-wound dudes, they die, you give your opponent glory, they're going to just boop kill, boop kill, boop kill, boop kill, and you bring him back and then they die again, right? Previously, there was no deck that gave them enough glory to combat that bleed. You need enough glory in your deck to just kind of be like, okay, well, you're killing me and getting 1 glory, but I'm like doing this other stuff and I'm getting 2 or 3 glory out of it, so that death was a positive trade for me in the long run. Tooth and Claw didn't do that for them, even though it did give them some good range one combat stuff in terms of like brutal transformation and others, feral instincts. Daring Delvers didn't really have the spike glory that they needed. Fearsome Fortress has some in terms of like the whatever the name of the one is where you get glory equal to the number of feature tokens you hold in the middle of the board. You could like really spike off that and get a bunch. But I think this just has a whole bunch of cards that are like, it's auto score for Exiled Dead. And when you have a whole deck of cards, when you have a whole deck of objective cards that you're mostly going to auto score, or at least like 10 of them are really easy to score, I don't think it matters that you bleed as much glory because you're just like, all right, man, you're killing me. You're getting some glory. You're getting 4 glory this round. I'm getting 6 glory this round. And I'm bringing my guys back. And they're getting upgrades. And I'm doing this other thing. And yeah, I just think that in the long run, that is going to make them a competitive pick again. And once they're competitive, I think they are always a threat of a top tier, a top placement, a podium, and maybe even a win just because they have that multi-move. They have that multi-attack. And if your opponent isn't careful, they're just going to corner your dude. They're just going to corner your faction with 5 zombies, and they're going to kill 3 dudes in a single turn, and you'll just not have a good time. And now they have a deck that supports them and allows them to do that. And I think that is potentially very, very scary. So we'll see. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe the power level does not spike them enough. Maybe Gnarl Spirit Tooth and Claw or Hexbane Tooth and Claw is still just a little bit too good for them to really deal with. But I have hope. I have hope that maybe this is enough of a shakeup. Exiled Dead comes back in. Maybe another team comes in to that also makes use of this. Maybe there's some weird, tricky Spike Claw Swarm deck that uses this. But we'll see. I don't know. That's just my feelings on the matter.
I think you're not... I know. I think that's really interesting. Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I think you're right. Let's see. I think you're right that they have the tools to be able to be competitive viable, and I think anything competitive can win. I agree with that. I wonder... No. At the risk of, like, making this episode any longer than it needs to be, I think that's a very interesting thought to, like, leave with our listeners. And maybe, you know, listeners, chime in. Do you think this deck is too good with Exiled Dead? Do you think it's good enough? Do you think this gives the Exiled Dead enough oomph they need to come back into the environment? Do you think they can win Adepticon? If you don't think they're going to win Adepticon, what do you think is going to win Adepticon? You know, Nemesis is a bit of its own beast. And I think that's really interesting. I guess my last question for you, Zach, is this going to pull you away enough from Kill Team to try this at Adepticon?
Maybe. I don't know. I actually have to see what the cutoff is for tickets. I'm currently signed up for the Kill Team Championship, so I don't know if I can switch at the moment.
You can. There's no more new tickets available.
Oh,
but if you already
you can
have a ticket, you can modify your registration.
I don't know. I do want to try it out. I'm glad this stuff is already up, because I think the Vassal mod is either out or already or is being worked on. And I do want to try it out for a handful of games and see how I feel about it. You know, no team in Nemesis currently tickles me. You know, I do like teams like Exiled Dead. And, you know, if this makes Exiled Dead a type of faction that I feel like, oh, yeah, you know, I could bring this and feel really good about playing it. Maybe. Yeah, I could absolutely see myself doing it.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I want. I want you to go back to Wonderworlds. It's not like you left, but you're just playing too much Kill Team right now.
Now, if I could get more locals to play Underworlds on a weekly basis, I would probably pay way more of it. But
yeah, same. Yeah. Yeah. That's why we play other games, because our locals play them. I get that.
Yeah. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Well, anyways, overall, I think, you know, Beastbound Assault, cool deck. It's a deck that is powerful in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as Zach has very aptly mentioned multiple times over the episode, it is a deck that may not be as ubiquitous as the rest, but with certain warbands, it can be just as powerful as some of the more powerful synergies out there, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
So let us know what warbands you're interested in playing the deck with.
Mm-hmm.
Do we recommend you buying this? I would say, yeah. I mean, you get to try it out. You get to play with it. If you have an old warband that you love that you think is going to go well with it, for sure. But the cool thing about these rival decks is it's plug and play.
I also think it's worth saying, if you're a championship player, I absolutely think you should buy this deck because it's finally a universal set of cards you can use with the other decks. So, and there's a few in here you are going to want to take.
That's correct. That's correct. Though I think a lot of play nowadays is Nemesis on the North American side. So sure, we'll see how that works out. But overall, buy it. Because the more you buy stuff, the more they'll make. And then we can keep playing the game and talking about it. So if you're still with us, thanks for listening. Once again, thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathtoglory. You can find all of our blog content at pathtoglorypodcast.com. And if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And as always, thanks for listening. And whether you are assaulting alongside beasts or fighting tooth and claw, we wish you the best of luck on your Path to Glory.